This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. This week's Hour of Old Time Radio Crime begins with Jack Webb as Jeff Regan investigator. We'll hear the Too Many Mrs. Rogers, his story from October 9th, 1948. After that, it's Rogues Gallery, and Phyllis Adrian is missing. That episode aired June 29th, 1947.
My name's Regan. I get 10 a day on expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan investigator, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Too Many Mrs. Rogers.
Seventh Street, near Olive. That's where it stands, downtown L.A. Cosmopolitan building. A big chunk of granite poking its way up through a parking lot. That's where you'll find International Detective Bureau, Suite 308. A good bargain counter if you're shopping around for trouble. Anthony J. Lyon, the guy I work for, pays the rent. Can't be very much because sunlight and those office walls have never said hello. The Cosmopolitan building. An air shaft runs right up the middle of it. Suite 308 is wrapped around that ventilator like a donut around a hole. Figures that the Weather Bureau ought to run a separate survey on that office. Because we get all the blow-by from the Acme Incense Company, three doors down the hall. Los Angeles smog had come in second best if they knew about it. Well, it was last Tuesday, the day that Cleveland won the pennant, that I walked in. The Lion was there pecking around on that same old Remington. Somebody'd broken the period key, but he didn't seem to mind. He talks in commas anyway. I don't know who he was writing to, but there were a couple of cereal box tops at his elbow and a contest blank. He was writing something about why I feed my children your breakfast food. The Lion's a bachelor.
Regan, who do you know in Battle Creek, Michigan?
Jack Armstrong.
I may win this contest. Here's one for you to fill in.
No, I don't eat breakfast.
This is different. I got it as a case. Here's the address. Hinkle and Hinkle.
Well, they make pills.
It's a funeral parlor, one of the best in town.
I'm healthy.
I want you to be very careful how you talk to these people.
Who, the customers?
Hinkle and Hinkle, father and son. They got a fine establishment, and all the best people go to them for the final rites.
Well, I'm fresh out of Shroud.
They got problems, Hinkle and Hinkle have.
What's the trouble?
Hop over there and they'll tell you.
I'd rather get it from you.
Regan, I can't do that.
Why?
You've read our business card. Anything told to an international man is in the strictest confidence. I wrote that, and won't double-cross a client.
Well, that's a new twist for you.
What do you mean?
Every day you dump these phony cases in my lap, and I go out on them. All I do is play tag with homicide.
You won't get caught.
A lot of canned tuna felt that way.
You know I take care of you.
That's what I don't like.
Hinkle and Hinkle are expecting you right now.
Yeah.
Jump in your car and get over there.
What do I say to them?
Just say hello. They'll pick it up from there.
You know, someday I'm going to quit.
If you do, you'll starve.
So what?
You'll still wind up at Hinkle and Hinkle.
Well, the place was on Hope Street near Washington Boulevard. You couldn't miss it. A two-story building painted a battleship gray that sort of crouched at the curb. It had a square pimple for a door and flanked on each side by a brass angel. They were a dirty green color. I figured that one of the Hinkles could have been a little more eager with the metal polish. The glass door was draped with white satin, and it fluttered as I walked in. The hall was quiet. There was enough marble inside to make the Bank of America jealous. Another angel, this time with the wings folded back, was pointing toward the reception room. I followed directions and moved on. It smelled like the bargain matinee at the Roxy. Over in one corner was a vase of tired-looking flowers, trying real hard not to be cheerful. A little guy in a black serge suit was floating around the room with an atomizer filled with perfume. The whole place was about as inviting as a maiden aunt's kiss. The little man didn't even look at me. He just kept squirting. He couldn't put the perfume people out of business, but I figured he had them working nights. Your name, Hinkle?
As soon as I finish.
Yeah, well, that might take months. That's a big bottle.
Don't you just adore this scent.
What's the matter? Aren't the flowers working?
Yeah, take that. Now then, sir.
I asked first.
Yes, I am Jason Hinkle.
Aren't there two of you?
Gerald?
Did you call, Pa?
Just showing this man the other Hinkle.
Oh, hi.
Now then, I believe that you'll find we can make all the necessary arrangements.
Save the commercial. Nobody's dead.
Oh, that's too bad. This week we're having a special at a greatly reduced rate.
Well, I figure I got a few more years. Now look, didn't you want to see me?
Oh, you from Atlas.
Who?
Atlas Casket Company. We have plenty on hand. Penicillin has practically ruined our business.
My name's Regan. I'm with International.
Oh, of course. You're the lion's eye. I'm glad you got here.
Well, tell me and we'll both be happy.
Hey, Pa, he don't look so tough.
Well, you do, Buster. You scare me.
I'll bet I could break you in the middle.
Never mind, Gerald. I'd have to apologize for him. He lifts weight.
Well, he'd have to carry that head around.
Just say the word, Pa.
Gerald. Now, Mr. Regan, if you'll step in the back room.
All right.
I have to be careful about Gerald. He's just a junior partner.
He ought to be the silent one.
He didn't learn to talk till he was almost 9.
I paid him for 6.
Drink, Mr. Regan.
No, thanks. I stopped drinking that stuff in 32.
Oh, you mean the formaldehyde label. Yes, I have to hide it from Gerald.
All right, now we've been through the family album. What's the job?
Ah, do you know a Mrs. Rogers?
The phone book's full of them.
Mrs. Rogers has been most unfortunate. Poor dear woman, they were married such a short time, and they were ecstatically happy.
Her husband died?
Mm-hmm, she lost him 3 days ago. Hinkle and Tinkle are handling the last rites. Poor Mrs. Rogers, she's so young.
You want a shoulder to cry on?
Mrs. Rogers wished her husband taken to the family plot in La Jolla. We are furnishing the limousine, and she's requested someone to accompany her.
I'll try a Pullman porter, they like to travel.
This whole thing has most unusual aspects. Mrs. Rogers thinks she needs protection.
We could send Gerald.
She'd still need protection. No, Mr. Regan, she wants you.
She paying for this?
I believe Mr. Lyon has her check.
Okay, is that all you got to tell me?
Mr. Regan, we only handle the debt.
Well, they don't need protection.
That's what they said about King Tut.
Hinkle gave me her address. It was over near Westlake Park. It was one of those new modern apartment houses painted an elephant pink. It was around 6 o'clock when I rang the bell. While I waited, I tried to figure this protection angle. I thought maybe I could talk her out of it and wind up the whole thing right here. I kind of figured that she was just upset and needed a man around. When she opened the door, I knew I was right. You could see she was in mourning. She was wearing black lipstick. She was tall and thin, with long blonde hair. She made Mr. Peabody's mermaid look like a beginner. Right then, I knew that this case was about as much on the level as the city of San Francisco. She needed protection, all right, but so did I. When she said hello, it melted all over you like honey on a hot biscuit.
You're standing in a draft.
Well, it's a warm night.
Well, come in.
You were Mrs. Rogers?
That's right.
My name's Regan.
The man from International. You're more than I paid for.
Prices are coming down.
Come over here where we can talk.
I got a big voice.
Oh, you act like you're afraid of me.
But I didn't think it showed.
Oh, yeah. You're just exactly what I wanted.
I used to be with an escort bureau.
Well, then this should be part of your service. I bet the bureau went broke when you quit.
No, but I left them in a hole.
Relax, Mr. Regan. It's early.
Now look, lady, we can play musical chairs some other time. What do you want?
Why, worry, you're getting paid.
Yeah, but this kind of stuff won't buy food.
I'm lonely.
Do your act in the Coliseum. It'll be a sellout.
You're practically a crowd.
That's what they say about three.
No, it's just you and me.
With a dead man in between.
Never mind Victor. He's my problem.
Not anymore. Come on, lady. This is a fat blister. Let's break it.
Slow down, Mr. Regan.
Maybe that's what happened to Victor.
All right. If you don't want to play my game, let's play yours.
That's why you hired me.
You know about my husband's coffin?
Hinkle's having a sale.
In the next room now. The limousine will be here in the morning at 8 sharp. We're going to La Jolla.
Hinkle knows that much.
And that's all you need to know.
All I need or all I get. Light up, lady. I don't like the dark.
It's a simple job. You go with me on the trip.
Not enough.
All right, I'll give you a bonus.
How much?
$1,000.
Just a whisper.
That's $10 a mile between here and La Jolla.
I get car sick. Now, what has to get there besides Victor?
A star sapphire as big as the moon.
That good?
Need sunglasses to look at it.
Well, why didn't you tell me?
I want that ring to get there on his finger.
Don't worry, I don't have a fence.
Victor's will said he must be buried with it on.
Oh, yeah, you got tears in your
eyes. That's what he wanted, and that's what he'll get. Other people know about that ring. Victor wouldn't want to lose it this late in the game.
I'm the nursemaid.
That's right. When I said I'd do to Victor in Yuma 1946, I promised him.
The trip to La Jolla?
I'll see you tomorrow morning at 8. Until then, get out.
That bonus still good?
If that ring gets to La Jolla?
I'll see that it does.
Aren't you afraid somebody might steal it?
No, Eddie. You're right with me. Well, I began to get an uneasy feeling, like a steer on the way to Kansas City. I left Helen Rogers and walked outside. There wasn't much traffic. It was a warm night, and all the canoes in Westlake Park were full. I headed for an all-night coffee spot on the corner. If I'd have taken one more step, I'd have been in the back seat of a new Nash convertible with a top down. There was a brunette with long black hair in the driver's seat. She was thin and figured to be tall, the way she was wrapped around the wheel. There were two things different. She had bright red lipstick, and her hair was black. She was wearing a dress the color of a boulevard stop, and she flipped the right door open. One look at her, and you knew that Dallas was wrong about their women.
Want a lift, soldier?
No, I only got a weekend pass.
Plenty of time. You can go AWOL.
No, I'm bucking for sergeant.
Get in, and I'll tell you about the atomic bomb.
Short ride?
No, I think a long
one. Okay, I'll buy the gas.
Won't have to, Mr. Regan. I've got a credit card.
Now, don't tell me you're lonely.
You're in trouble.
What kind?
Bad client.
Why?
You should be working for Mrs. Rogers.
That's who signed the check.
I'm Mrs. Rogers.
Blonde's got a license to prove it. Yuma, 1946.
I've got priority. Mexico City, 1942.
No divorce?
Victor was a poor boy scout. He could only tie one knot.
He went for the chorus line.
And played for Keith. And I loved him. Helen didn't.
How do I know?
I don't care if you do.
All right. What do you want with me?
I'm his wife, his first one, his real. We had some sort of life together before the scenes changed. It's my job to bury him.
That all?
That's all.
The corkscrew. Straighten it out, sis.
I'm telling you the truth.
You left out one item. Tell me that sapphire's got nothing to do with the affection.
It has.
That's what the other Ms. Rogers said.
She's a liar.
A blonde one.
She'll run out of bleach.
You're trying too hard.
I'm telling you, Regan, I'm not going to sit by and do nothing.
I believe you. You're letting your fingernails grow. Well, the brunette's name turned out to be Catherine Rogers. She gave me her number, but I wasn't buying. I felt kind of confused, like a polar bear in Palm Springs. Catherine didn't have any more, so she let me off on a corner, and I doubled back to the first Mrs. Rogers' place. It was about 20 minutes later when I rang Helen's bell. No answer. The door was unlocked, so I went in. The room was dark, except for the neon sign outside the bedroom window. I could see Victor Rogers' coffin banked up with flowers. The biggest blossom was already wilted. It was Helen. She was lying on the floor and her fire was out. I went back to the living room to call homicide. Then I smelled taboo perfume. She made a real good reflection in the mirror behind me. This one was a redhead. She had long hair. She was tall and thin enough to slip under the door. She had a little hand, but her finger could reach the trigger of the gun that she had in my back. I couldn't tell too much about it, but if I'd known her in college, my homework would have suffered.
Don't make it, Dave. You're not going to make it.
She'll wait.
It may be forever. Hang it up.
Did you do the job on the blonde?
Maybe.
Too many going for that sapphire.
Maybe.
Which one are you?
Rita.
Where'd he find you?
South America.
Different places, different girls.
That's it.
He'd make a good advance man for the United Nations.
Just the female department.
All right. When'd you win your letter?
Havana, 1944.
You're right in the middle.
No, you are.
Well, the Andrews sisters did all right.
I want to do it with you.
I'll sing off key.
That's all right. It's your style.
No music.
You're not listening hard enough.
Oh. Well, South America took it away. When I came out of it, I was all head, like tap beer in a cheap saloon. The room was full of homicide. They must have got a hot shot call, because they were all there. All I could see was the seats of their pants. I picked out the shiniest pair, and I knew it was Sergeant Sanducci. He was standing over me with a notebook. The way he was sucking on that pencil, I figured he must have been a lollipop man in his youth. Everybody was there. All the newspapers, the fingerprint men were dusting everything. I had about as much chance as a Christmas tree salesman in July. Sanducci leaned into me.
Borderline anemia?
Oh, huh?
Kind of tired?
Yeah.
Anybody would get tired lugging a heavy gun.
What gun?
This 38. It pushed a hole in that blonde.
That's not mine.
Who cares? The hand is yours. That's where we found it.
Hey, Sanducci, let me shoot a picture of the eye, will you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Look happy, Regan.
I got a bad smile.
Oh, we'll retouch it. Good. Now, look like a killer.
That's enough.
Oh, come on. Let's see your teeth.
Beat it, punk, or you'll spend the rest of the night picking yours up.
How do you like that?
Okay, Regan. Now, why'd you do it?
You tell me.
I'm working.
You're out of your mind. I blow a hole in it and crack myself in the head?
I'm working on that, too.
We're working a redhead named Rita Rogers.
I'm going steady.
She wrapped me. It's her gun.
Your forehead is wet.
Working a brunette named Catherine Rogers. She's grubbing around, too.
I told you I already got a date. You.
You couldn't see a frame in a picture gallery.
You walk in and find a warm blonde in a deep freeze. You're lying there with the murder gun in your hand and you're yelling patsy. What were you doing here?
I was on a job.
Yeah.
The Lion sent me over to Hinkle and Hinkle, two needle pushers out in Washington. They sent me over here. I was supposed to go to La Jolla with that blonde.
On Lion's time?
I said it was a job. She was taking her dead husband down to the family plot. She was worried about a sapphire ring. Look in the coffin, you'll see.
We already did.
Well, what'd you find?
Air. The coffin was empty.
You are listening to the story of the Too Many Mrs. Rogers, tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. Commissions are still available in the Army Nurse Corps Reserve. If you are a graduate registered nurse between the ages of 21 and 45, you may be eligible for a commission in the Army Nurse Corps section of the Regular Officers Reserve. These commissions are still available, and those who meet the high standards and qualify with this fine organization may elect active or inactive status. If you believe you qualify for a commission in the Army Nurse Corps Reserve, apply to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now back to the story of the Too Many Mrs. Rogers and Jeff Regan, the investigator.
Well, I had about as much chance as a snowball in a Turkish bath. The Lion sends me to a funeral parlor run by two guys named Hinkle and Hinkle. They bank me off to a blonde, Mrs. Rogers, who wants protection taking her husband's body to La Jolla. He's being lowered with a star sapphire on his finger. Everybody's scrambling for it. But Victor Rogers was a collector of long-legged ladies, and the blonde turns out to be just a single in the crowd scene. There's two other Mrs. Rogers, a brunette and a redhead. You can't tell one from the other without a program. The next thing I know, the blonde is dead. I'm holding the murder gun and an alibi as full of as many holes as a piece of cheesecloth. There's no star sapphire, no body in the coffin, and Sanducci of homicide is pounding away at me. Well, the police finished in the blonde's apartment. The prints were lifted, the gun was wrapped. It was Sanducci all the way.
Come on, Regan, say why.
You're pressing.
I just work hard.
You got nothing.
You'll be saying that in the chamber.
You're bluffing.
How you figure?
The setup's so strong, even you can smell it.
I got silent.
Well, you're not taking me in.
Who said I was? We'll be around for you when we're ready.
Retirement will set in first.
I'll sign for another hitch.
Look, if you got to keep beating your head against the wall, come over to my place.
What for?
It's brick. I left Sanducci still chewing his pencil and headed back to the office. I knew homicide wouldn't let the matter drop, so I wanted to see if maybe the Lion could do me any good. I didn't have any supper, but somehow I'd lost my appetite. When I walked in, the Lion was still working on that contest blank. He was keeping late hours, and the only reason he doesn't go to his hotel room is he gets a reduction in his weekly rate if he doesn't sleep in the bed.
Regan, where you been?
Reading Sanducci.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
How many times have I told you to watch that staff?
Well, you never check before you send a guy out on a job.
What have you got?
She's beautiful.
What else?
She's dead.
That's no way to run a business.
You got your advance.
I was thinking of public relations.
Oh, stop it, will you? Somebody mentions dough and you're there with a basket.
That's enough. Let's drop this case.
Not until the wind dies down.
I got another job for you.
I'm still with the old one.
The case is closed.
Oh, I'm opening
you
it.
You do, you're told.
Now, listen, Big Shot. You ease me in on that hook. Now, let's see you work backwards.
Regan, you're getting out of line.
Get a trace on Catherine and Rita Rogers.
Who are they?
A brunette and a redhead.
What else?
Victor Rogers' wife.
What about Helen?
His record broke on I Do.
Well, get going and clear this thing up.
Would you like to give it a whirl?
Regan, don't you like working for me?
I'll answer that when we both got more time. Well, I left the line, picked up a cup of coffee and a sandwich, and went home. Then I tried to figure the mess. A guy with three wives drops dead and is going to be buried with a fortune on his fingers. All the hens start clawing around. That figures. One of them gets the axe. I happen in. Set up for a patsy. That figures. But what doesn't is why is the coffin empty? Somebody pulls a knockoff to grab a sapphire and takes the stiff with it. Getting nowhere, like a pickpocket in a nudist colony. The next morning, I was back on Embalmer's Row, Hinkle and Hinkle. I went inside. The little guy in the black suit and his son were standing in the entrance hall. Old Hinkle came toward me kind of slow, like an ant with a super chief in tow.
You're back so soon, Regan. Everything all right at Mrs. Rogers?
Your business is picking up.
I don't understand.
Neither do I. You fill it in.
Now, there's no use taking that belligerent attitude.
Now, listen, you. I played Patsy long enough.
Hey, Pa, shall I mash him?
You heard Gerald, Regan. Now, get your paws off of me, quick.
You're backstage now. Your grease paint's off.
I don't know why you came back here. You don't know anything about it.
That's your version.
Look, Regan, I'm going to try to let you down easy, so pay attention. You were called on a routine job. We played our part, now you play yours. Take that trip to La Jolla.
We're going
to
need a bigger car now.
I told you all I know. Now beat it.
Homicide wants somebody. I'm going to give him you.
You're on a treadmill.
That's all right. It's slowing down.
I'm tired of this small talk, Regan. Now get out of here before I sick Gerald on you.
Is that all you got to offer?
That's it. Now blow.
Okay. Next time I'll bring homicide.
Just won't give up, will you? Gerald?
Yeah. How do you want him, Pa? Broken too?
You handle it. I'll be in the back room.
Fist or gunbutt, Pa? Hold still. You should be glad Pa didn't say fist. It's harder. See? I dreamed about you last night, Regan.
Must have been something you ate.
I dreamed I broke you in two.
You're still walking in your sleep.
You say funny things, Regan, but your face don't go with it.
Get away from me, you big ape.
I seen a clown in a circus once. He had a big red nose like this. And he didn't have no teeth. And he had little teensy eyes way back in his head. Yeah, you make a swell clown now.
I was getting nowhere, like a skywriter in a high wind. Gerald must have got tired. He stood over me grinning like a Notre Dame gargoyle. I tried to get up a couple of times, but it would have been easier to get to Ohio on a pogo stick. I kept wondering if he'd ever quit when the front door opened and Catherine, the brunette Mrs. Rogers, came in. She had a .32 in her hand and she leveled it at Gerald.
Stop it!
We're going to the circus.
Stop it or I'll kill you!
All right, you heard her.
What about the circus?
Come here, you. There ought to be a place for you in the sideshow.
I got tired waiting for you to come to me.
Yeah, thanks.
Shall we go where we can talk?
What do you want?
You.
So did Junior here.
My hands are softer.
Your gun isn't.
You can hold it.
Not good enough.
Still don't trust me?
No.
I'll go in your car.
It gets better.
I'll go to your place.
Okay.
You won't be sorry.
Why?
Because I'm going to help you.
You just did, lady. We left Hinkle and Hinkle and drove up Washington to Vermont and then north toward Hollywood. Above Beverly, we had to detour for the freeway coming and it made me kind of mad. I'd been detouring since the beginning. Well, she didn't say much, and I tried to figure. Last time I saw her, she gave me a choke act about being the only one who ever loved Victor. And the next thing I knew, I was set up like pins in a bowling alley, and Sanducci was going for 300. We pulled to a stop in front of my place and went in. Inside, there was company. She wasn't invited. But the red-headed Rita, the South American bombshell, was lying on my bed. Somebody had set her off. She was dead. This is the kind of help you mean?
I didn't know she was here.
Oh, come off it. You're not Bergman.
I didn't.
She's past convincing.
I'm talking to you.
So am I.
Rita.
No go, lady. You knocked her off, got me over here, worked the gun into my hand.
No.
You did the first job, too. You let me out of your car, double back to Helen's before I got there and fogged her.
No, you're wrong.
Write me.
I did double back to Helen's apartment and got there before you.
Looking for that sapphire.
Looking for a showdown on Vic's burial. It was my job.
You said that before.
We argued.
Pulling hair.
I didn't touch her.
Go on.
When I left, Rita was coming up the stairs. She didn't see me. I stepped into the shadows and watched her go into Helen's apartment. They began screaming. I looked in and saw Rita kill her. Then I heard someone coming and ran.
That'd be me, huh?
Yes.
Moving in to play Patsy.
And I heard the police thought you did it.
That's right.
So I looked for you.
Tell that to Homicide.
I will.
You make it sound good.
It is.
Cleans up one, but you're not through.
Why?
It's a doubleheader. Who killed Rita?
I don't know.
What happened to the sapphire?
I don't know.
Where's Victor's body?
What do you mean?
It's not in the box. Oh, sure. Wind it up and make it good.
I don't know.
The wrong pitch.
You still don't trust me.
Not until you clean up the rest, no.
She can't, oh. Regan. I've got the broom.
Victor!
Nice of you to remember, Catherine.
How do you remember?
I got a card file.
You can throw away some pages.
That's what I figured. I've been tagging after the two of you for some time.
So you're Victor. Well, it's beginning to clear. You got Hinkle to help you play dead.
Tell me why.
You tell me.
I'm moving up in society. I have to unload.
It all figures. You're dead. The wives start working for the loot. In the scramble, they take care of each other. The redhead gets the blonde. You get the redhead.
And take care of what's left. Now let's close the book.
Victor's aim was good. Catherine went down. Sanducci got Victor from the bedroom window. His sapphire ring caught the light as he sprawled on the floor. And then Sanducci climbed in off the fire escape. Catherine's hair was still long, but she wasn't tall anymore.
Regan.
Yeah, baby.
Victor.
He's through.
He was no good.
Yeah.
But I loved him.
Uh-huh.
We should have met sooner. So long, I told you.
That's it, Regan.
Yeah.
She seemed like a nice kid.
Yeah. It's gonna be a long trip, but she'll make it. Well, that was it. Victor was ambitious. He was moving up in society and couldn't stand a bigamy scandal. His brain worked overtime cooking up that dish. He rigged it with the blonde, Helen, at first. But she got it right off from the redhead. That didn't make him cry. Took care of one. When the redhead came over to my place, Victor tagged her and put her away there. Two down, and I'm the fall guy. Then he waited for the brunette so he could finish the game. Oh, yeah. Vic was a busy fella, but he ran out of breath. Well, Sanducci put my place back in order, and nothing was left of the girls with the long hair but dandruff. I called the lion, and he was mad, a whole day shot without adding a mark to his bank account. Well, Sanducci and I both came up with the same question. All three of those women were beautiful. I wonder if they'd all gone for Victor if they really knew. That star sapphire was a phony.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan, with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon. Jeff Regan Investigator, written by Larry Roman and D. Jack Newman, produced by Sterling Tracy, is heard each week at this time over CBS. Tonight's cast included Grace Lenard, Gloria Blondell, Laurette Philbrant, John Hoyt, Jack Petrucci, Paul Fries, and David Ellis. If you are a graduate registered nurse, please listen carefully to this important message. 29,000 nurses are needed to join the new Army Nurse Corps Officers Reserve. For the first time in history, qualified nurses have the opportunity of receiving commissions in the regular Army Reserve. These nurses will remain on inactive status, ready to serve their country in time of emergency. For further information, drop a card to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. Original music for this program is by Milton Charles. Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Rumor. laugh a while at a song to your style, you spit shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, shave your hair, you spit shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Barry Sullivan as Private Detective Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. You know, in my business, it's hard to get ahead. There's so many other people trying to get ahead. My head, that is. Sometimes I think it might be better to let them scrape my name off the door before they chisel it into a headstone. Because I'm just a guy who doesn't like to see people get pushed around. Myself in particular. And I often wonder if there's any real future for me in the sneak, snoop, and snitch racket when so many people don't want me to have one. That was the frame of mind I was in one Saturday afternoon when Howard Adrian, a well-known mouthpiece, called to tell me his troubles. Hello.
Rogie, this is Howard Adrian.
Hey, how are you? Say, you're just in time. I'm thinking of selling out. Got a wonderful set of law books here. Let you have them cheap. Never even cut the pages. Never had time.
Listen, Rogie, my wife is missing.
Well, she's not here. I just took inventory.
You don't understand. She's gone, vanished. I'm worried, Rogie.
How long has she been gone, Howard?
2 weeks.
What have you done to locate her?
Nothing at all, until now. This has got to be between you and me, Rogie. You see, it's rather delicate. Phyllis is pretty headstrong, and I've got to move cautiously.
Okay, Howard, I think I understand. You sit tight, I'll be right over. And relax. Richard Rogue will bring her back alive. Yeah, that's what I said. But the way it turned out, I didn't. I paid a call on Howard Adrian. His outer office was empty, and when I entered his private office without knocking, I found him kissing his secretary. It made a pretty picture, suitable for framing. Well, well, now I get it. You buried your wife in the cellar like Edgar Allan Poe so you could marry your beautiful secretary. You only hired me for a blind, like in the detective story.
Cut it out, Rogie. Your attempted humor isn't funny.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Sorry, no time for me to go popping off.
All right. This is Miss Corbin. Miss Crystal Corbin, Richard Rogue.
I'm Tom.
Likewise. Now, Howard, how about your wife?
Just a minute. That'll be all, Miss Corbin.
No, wait. Maybe she can help.
Well, I don't see what
I suppose we may as well tell Mr. Rogue. You see, Crystal and I...
That's enough. It's an old story.
I hope we're not boring you.
Not at all. Well, here's some good news. I may have a line on her already. The elevator operator tells me he took her down from here on the day she disappeared. She was with a tall man with brown muscles.
Oh, yes, that would be Nicky Barron.
Nicky Barron, I know him. He used to be mixed up with Rocky Malatesta when they were running the gambling ships off the coast. Stood trial for the murder of Pig Muldoon in Frisco. Gang war. Say, Howard, didn't you handle Barron's defense at that trial?
That's right.
Well, he must have been clean or you wouldn't have touched him.
Thanks, and you're right. That's how I built my reputation, and the reputation helped. Nicky was acquitted, and he stayed clean ever since.
Doing what?
Doing all right, apparently. Operates a small club in the valley, the Mandalay. Dropped in to see me the other day. Looked sharp.
And walked out with your wife, eh?
This is ridiculous. There was nothing between Mrs. Adrian.
Whose side are you on, Miss Corbin?
She's only trying to help.
Sure, sure. Howard, you know, your working conditions are so pleasant, I can't see why you want me to find your wife. Why not leave well enough alone?
Because Howard wants her back so he can make a clean break. Get things settled once and for all.
That's right. You find her so I could lose her, legally.
She'll give you a divorce?
She wants one herself.
Oh, why?
She doesn't like me.
Oh, she doesn't like you?
No.
Does she love you?
Cigarette?
Thanks.
Light.
Thanks.
Rogie, don't worry about it. Just find Phyllis and forget the rest.
Sure, Howard, I'll remember that. But if I don't forget it, you remind me, huh? Phyllis Adrian seemed to have vanished like Judge Crater. She seemed to have rolled her footsteps up behind her, and even her shadow must have been following the wrong blonde. My first move in locating her was refreshingly simple. I merely called another private detective and assigned him to check every hotel in town at half my daily fee. Yeah, I should have been an agent. Then I headed for the Mandalay. The Mandalay was lined with woven grass mats and paneled with bamboo. You could have held hands across the dance floor. And in the middle of it, a girl was trying to shake herself out of a coat of grease paint and a sarong. I got past her all right without being hit by a flying hip and made the door of Nicky Barron's office. It was easy money. Phyllis Adrian was there.
Well,
Well, hello, Mrs. Adrian.
Goodbye, Mr. Rogue.
Why, Nicky, that's not a very warm welcome.
I'll make it warmer if you get funny, Snooper.
My friends say I'm naturally funny. Maybe we'd make a team. I think you're a wonderful stooge.
I warned you, Gumshoe.
Nicky, don't kill him.
Yes? Wouldn't that be a shame? Okay, Rogue, stand up and take it.
Oh, relax, will you? You start off like that, what you gonna do for an encore?
Why don't you, Snoop, leave me alone? I'm in the clear with this joint.
Very interesting. Fall back and regroup, Nicky. I'm not interested in you.
Well, then put that sock on your account in case you get that way. Come on, get off the floor. It's a new carpet.
It's Mrs. Adrian
I care about.
Oh, really?
Sure enough, baby. Can't think of anybody I care more about at the moment.
Well, Nicky, the man is utterly clean.
Yeah, the life of the party, that's him.
Will you see me when I try on the lampshades? Mrs. Adrian, shall we rumble?
I'd be utterly delighted.
Just one little thing first. Nicky, would you step over here a minute? No, a little more this way, please. That's good.
Oh.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. A comedy team. Slapstick. Did you get that wonderful fall?
Why, Mr. Rose, you have muscles.
Nah, I just blow myself up with a bicycle pump. Shall we go? And that's the first act of tonight's graphic adventure from Rogue's Gallery. The F.W. Fitch Company is presenting Barry Sullivan as star of this Sunday series, bringing you the adventures of Private Detective Richard Rogue. In just a moment, we'll continue with our story. America's number one hair problem is dandruff. Yes, according to a current survey made by Cosmopolitan Magazine, 61.5% of those interviewed said their number one hair problem is dandruff. You can lick this problem by using Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo regularly. Fitch is the only shampoo made whose guarantee to remove dandruff with the first application is backed by one of the world's largest insurance firms. Keep your hair dandruff-free with Fitch Shampoo. And men, for hair with that just-combed look, use Fitch's new Quinoil Hair Tonic. Quinoil gives your hair its rightful, healthy-looking luster, even if it's been dried out by hot summer sun and wind. Not sticky or greasy, Quinoil is blended from 5 essential oils for perfect hair grooming. Get Fitch's Quinoil Hair Tonic at toilet goods counters. Quinoil is spelled Q-U-I-N-O-I-L. Later in tonight's program, a special offer for the United States only will be made. Everyone in the family will want to listen for details. When I walked in on a tender love scene between Howard Adrian and his secretary, I couldn't see why he was so anxious for me to locate his missing wife. But I did locate her, and I was ready to take her home. Though I had to overcome the objections of one Nicky Barron, proprietor of the Mandalay. I guess Nicky was convinced, though, because as he lay there on the carpet, he didn't seem to have another word to say. Well, for a moment, Phyllis Adrian seemed undecided between the horizontal Mr. Barron and the perpendicular Mr. Rogue. Then she began to smile.
I must admit, that's an utterly divine Sunday Wallace you pass.
Just part of life at its best.
Oh, yes. It's given me an idea. Be a nice boy, will you, and wait for me in the lobby?
Well, I don't like to wear out my welcome.
Oh, it'll only be a minute. When this wilted snapdragon revives, I'll have something to say to him that isn't for your shall I hear. Be a darling.
So I was a darling. What else could I do? In that silk dress, Phyllis Adrian's geography was making history. I waited in the lobby, and I was just telling the hat check girl to look out for men who tell hat check girls to look out for men when someone tugged at my sleeve. I turned around. At first, I didn't recognize her without her lipstick smeared. It was Crystal Corbin.
Well, well, Miss Corbin. You're looking a little like a Dresden doll tonight.
Thanks, same to you. Look, Mr. Rogue, you've done your job. You found Mrs. Adrian. It's all Howard's paying you to do. Why not be smart and stop playing with dynamite? Leave Nicky Barron alone.
Crystal, kid, you surprise me. What makes you think I'm interested in Nicky Barron?
Because I know you had Betty Callahan checking the newspaper files this afternoon on the death of Pig Muldoon. And Nicky won't like that.
My, it's a crime to waste those gams doing Nicky's legwork. What's your interest, Crystal?
Well, you interest me. Enough so I wouldn't like to see that smile without any teeth in it.
Why, Chris, I didn't know you cared.
Mr. Rogue, forget Nicky Barron and get Mrs. Adrian back to her husband. Maybe I will, Kate.
That's just what I'm trying to do, darling. If people will stop shoving Nicky Barron down my throat.
Uh-oh. Here comes Phyllis. Forget his father. Good boy. Right where I left him.
Ready to go back to Papa?
Oh, don't be so eager to get rid of me. I still have one more stop to make to bring about everything I've been trying to do these 2 weeks. You're important in my plans.
Look, where do I fit in? We've only just met.
Well, it's complicated, but you fit in. I'll tell you this much. I'm up to my mascara on a tricky business deal, and you're the lever I need to swing it.
Uh-huh.
Play along a few more hands without looking at my cards, and I'll cut you in on the spot.
I've already got a deal from your husband, remember?
Oh, I'll see you collect on that, too, and I'll double it.
Say no more. I'm in. Now, whose grave do I have to rob?
Well, you're not so far wrong as that, Richard. We're selling a course, but all you have to do is stand in the background and rattle its bones.
We got where we were going at 10:25. It was a house on the ocean front, near Malibu. Whose place is this?
Ask me no questions, Lucy. What are you waiting for? An engraved invitation?
Nope, just looking for the light switch. Here it is. The place was a man's idea of what a woman would think a man's place ought to look like. Lots of copper, knotty pine, big brick fireplace, white bearskin rug, you know, the works. One end of the room was sliding glass windows from top to bottom, looking out on a private beach and plenty of Pacific. I'd no sooner taste the layout than Phyllis Adrian snapped off the lights.
Hey, cut it out. I'm scared of the dark.
Oh, now, Mr. Muscles, don't tell me you're frightened of poor little me.
Could be, baby, could be. But I just don't like the idea of making mud pies in somebody else's sandbox.
Relax. Come here and sit down. Don't you love the moonlight, Bishop?
It's overrated. It shines on the same things the sun does, baby.
But on them it looks good.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's none of us so perfect we couldn't stand a softer focus.
In more ways than one. More ways than one.
Let's just stick to one.
All right.
What's up? Whose place is this? She smiled but didn't answer. And it was right then I began to feel that knot in my chest. The uncanny vibrations of something about to happen. And from then until it did happen, my heart was on a pogo stick and my nerves were skipping rope. Phyllis went to the record cabinet and fumbled through a row of platters until she found the one she wanted. In pale, ethereal strains of a violin filled the room, thin and ghostly. Mrs. Adrian listened like someone in a dream. She floated to the chair opposite me and settled herself in it like a cloud coming to rest on a hill.
Recognize the artist?
Who is it, Evelyn and her magic violin?
No, darling. It's Yegorsky. This is his house. And this composition he wrote only for me.
Pretty.
Romantic.
Sure. Come on over here and sit on the sofa.
No, thank you. I always sit here when he plays. He stands right there. And I sit here, always.
You always close your eyes?
Yes. Try it. Really?
Well, anything for a thrill. Well, music appreciation's a wonderful thing. But gunshot crescendos are too modern for my taste. I opened my eyes and left him a feet, and that knot in my chest pulled tight as a hangman's noose. Phyllis Adrian still sat where she was sitting. There was still a smile on her face. She still looked good. Yeah, good and dead. There was a gushing red hole in her throat. The clock said 11:05. I don't know why. The first thing I did was knock the playing arm off that record. I guess it made me nervous. Then I took a quick study around the house. There was no one in the kitchen, the closets, or under the bed. The shot seemed to have come from close by, maybe from the private beach beyond the big window, so I dived through them. There was nothing out there but sand, pounding surf and fog. Fog thick as taffy was rolling in off the sea. Coming in fast like they do at Malibu. Blotting out everything. Everything but one shape at the shoreline that didn't look like driftwood. I yanked out my heater and dropped to the sand.
Hey, you! Stop swimming or digging. I'm coming after you.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
I'll give you the first one. Don't be silly. I'm not that polite.
I ain't got no gun!
That proves I have got one. So you'd better start spitting bullets, kids, and make that first one count.
I started inching toward him, my finger trembling on the trigger, ready for a duel in the fog, but he foxed me. He stood up and started waving his arms over his head.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot! I'll give up!
Okay, buddy, just hold it like that.
Now, start talking. Who are you?
Bert Heck. Hey, the private, Snoop.
Yeah, how'd you know?
No, why, I'm the guy who hired you to find Mrs. Adrian.
You're Richard Rose?
Yeah, you're working for me.
Well, I found her.
Yeah, but I said find her, not get her dead or alive.
Now, wait a minute. You ain't telling me I did it.
Who else?
You won't get sore.
No, I won't get sore.
You did.
I did?
Sure, I seen you. I was watching through the big windows. You were sitting on the couch with your back to me. She was sitting in the chair facing me. You was listening to the music, and all of a sudden you let her have it. What's the matter? Don't you like music?
Not the kind you're making. I want to know how you happen to be outside that window. I told you to check hotels for Mrs. Adrian. Tonight I find you peeping through windows that belong to a friend of hers. You get around. You're terrific. Tell me your secret.
Oh, well, I found a dame registered at the Wiltshire Park Terrace as Adrian Howard. Howard Adrian, Adrian Howard. You get it?
Wonderful. How'd you ever figure it out?
Listen, if you can't praise the other guy's work, don't knock it.
Okay, keep talking.
Well, I checked the telephone calls and they was all to this beach address. She wasn't in, so I come out looking for her. I looked through the window and I seen it happen.
You saw me kill her, huh?
Well, it was kind of dark. Maybe it was two other fellas. And since it's you holding the gun, Rogue, yeah, guess I must have made a mistake.
If you thought I did it, why didn't you go for a cop instead of hiding out here on the beach?
Oh, at your age, Rogue, I didn't want no cops in on the deal. I was going to tell you, when you left, you've been in this racket long enough to know that there's more mula in not telling who done it. You know what I mean?
You'd put the hooks in me for a hush, eh?
Well, we all make mistakes, Rogue.
Sure, but you're overdoing it. Okay, Bert, let's go inside the house. I'm calling homicide.
You'll be sorry.
Somebody's going to be sorry.
All right, Rogue, drop that heater and reach.
You were right, Bert. I'm sorry. Okay, Baron, this makes you dealer.
Smart boy, Rogue. Now hand over those papers.
Papers? Oh, I might have known there'd be papers. Well, I hate to say this because I know what'll happen, but... What papers? Oh, that's it. It happened.
Papers you wanted bad enough to bump Mrs. Adrian for.
Oh, now you're telling me I didn't.
Who else?
I thought you did.
Now, wait a minute. I just walked into this. I found her that way. Don't try to hang it on me.
Oh, don't mind him. He tries to hang it on anybody who comes along.
Yes. Who's this creep?
A business associate. You can talk in front of him.
Okay. For your benefit, creep, this dame tried to shake me down tonight. I was supposed to meet her at 12 o'clock with 10 grand in hush money. When I walked in, she was... like that.
Go ahead. Tell him where I come in.
Oh, sure. I was having trouble raising the dough, so she tells me tonight she's taking Rogue into the deal with her. There's a smart shamus like him would know how to peddle that kind of dope. But Rogue here couldn't wait for the split, so he cut her out with a slug.
That wraps it up, a motive. Oh, but one thing. What was he selling?
I don't mind telling you now. I got nothing to lose. Besides, you two have a murder rap of your own to settle between you. Okay. I got a little careless once up in Frisco. I was tossing lead around for a bluff, and a gent named Pig Muldoon stepped into one and called me. Oh, I was very sorry, but it couldn't have happened to a worse rat.
Yeah, sure, I remember, but I thought you was cleared.
Yeah, I was. There was just one little technicality. I was guilty.
Howard Adrian didn't know that when he took the case.
No, not when he took the case, he didn't. But before the trial was over, he did. See, the jury was already out when a guy called Meathead Maxwell paid him a call. He was the boy who was with me at the time. He wasn't trying to finger me. He just wanted a little powder money to blow town before anyone caught up with him and started asking questions.
You mean Adrian made a deal? Withheld state's evidence.
Yeah. He probably wouldn't have, but the jury was already out and he built up such a beautiful case. But he still didn't like it. No, he got me off all right, but he also got a statement from the meathead. And he's been holding it over my head, making me walk the chalk.
That was what was in the papers, huh?
You catch on quick, kid.
Yeah.
But I was doing all right, you see. Until Mrs. Adrian gets her mitts on the safety deposit key. All in the line of her wifely duties going through his pockets one night. Next day, she opens the box and pulls out my pass. And starts in selling it back to me.
I can't see her doing it. She's doing all right, ain't she? Just being Mrs. Adrian.
Yeah, but she's not being just Mrs. Adrian. She's being a patron of the arts on the side. Sponsoring concerts here and there. And I'm the angel. Either I angel her boyfriend, Igorsky, or she spades up Muldoon.
Nice dinner.
Yeah, I thought she'd like it. All right, now, Rose, how about it, huh? No hard feelings. If you're still selling, I'm still buying. As for killing that dame, all I got for you is congratulations.
Okay. You put it that way, did you bring the money with you?
Sure, I got it right here.
Let's see it.
Yeah, it is, right here.
Oh! You see, Bert, he's not so tough. That's the second time tonight he's dropped his guard.
Neither you. You made the very same mistake. Folding money. Legal letters. Tons of it. So long, kitty. Rest easy now. You look real cute there. Cheek to cheek.
Folks, here it is. A bullet ballpoint pen, specially for you from the Fitch Company. Yes, it's made from a genuine U.S. 30 caliber machine gun cartridge. It's sleek, streamlined, all metal and chrome plated. Filled with non-smear ink, it writes for months. It's neat, compact, only 4 inches long, just right to slip into purse or pocket. Dad will want one for notes, Mother will want one for her purse. And kids, you'll be the envy of the neighborhood if you have one. And here's all you do to get your bullet ballpoint pen. Send your name and address with 25 cents and the box top from any one of these three Fitch products. Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo, Quinoil Hair Tonic, or Skin Pep After Shaving Lotion. Mail to Fitch, Des Moines, 6, Iowa. That's Fitch, Des Moines, 6, Iowa. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H. And now back to Barry Sullivan as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
I woke up with a lump the size of a hat on my head. Both my playmates were gone. Hecht with the 10 grand and Barron probably after him with a grudge. And me with nothing but a corpse, I'd have a swell time explaining. I dragged myself to the phone and called Betty Callahan, a newspaper gal who sometimes knows the answers. I told her what happened and asked her to check the alibis of 3 other people, Crystal Corbin, Howard Adrian, and the violinist, even Igorsky. Then I spent the next 20 minutes trying to figure out one for myself. I still didn't have one when the telephone rang. It was Betty. At the time of the murder, Howard Adrian had been making a speech in front of 70 lawyers in a downtown hotel. Ivan Igorsky was in San Diego giving a concert. He only had 2,000 witnesses. The way the alibis were stacking up, I figured Crystal Corbin would have been taking a bath in the Hollywood Bowl. But no, she'd been with Howard. Betty said she'd notified him and he was on his way out. So I had to have some answers ready fast. And then I saw it. The answer was in front of me all the time. Phyllis Adrian. The bullet had entered her throat at an up angle from somewhere near the floor. From that, I traced the possible trajectory of the slug to its point of origin and found myself looking at a wall gas heater with an aluminum grillwork. I went over to it, knelt down, twisted some knobs, and removed the grill. There, wired to the pipes inside, was a .22 target pistol. A little further back, clamped to another pipe, was a silver tuning fork. 2 fine copper wires ran from the tips of the fork to the trigger of a gun. The trip hammer of the gun had been worked on with a file to make it respond to a hair trigger touch. I didn't have to test it to know that the tuning fork would vibrate to the crescendo in Igorsky's concerto. The concerto of death.
Rose, we got here as fast as we could. What happened?
Oh, Howard. Phyllis, how horrible.
Oh, don't look up.
Oh, it's better you don't. I think she'd want a softer focus.
But I don't understand. How could it happen with you right here?
There's your killer, Howard. Death by remote control. Commits murder on cue to a musical note.
Good Lord, what a devilish thing. But who?
Why didn't you tell me your wife was in love with another man?
What? But how could I? I never knew.
You're sure of that?
Of course I'm sure. What are you driving at, Rogue?
Well, somebody knew. Whoever planted this gadget knew every detail. That she always sat in that chair, in that exact spot, whenever she listened to him play.
Who could have known that except the other man?
Yeah, that's a natural thought, Crystal. I think it's what we were meant to think. But it isn't the answer.
You know the answer.
I know a lot of answers, baby. Now, did you ever tell Howard you were Nikki Barron's sister?
How did you ever find that out?
The old newspaper files of the trial, baby. You changed your name and the color of your hair, but you were still Nikki's sister, and you couldn't hide that.
She wasn't trying to hide it. I knew it all the time. You can't persecute the girl because of her brother.
I'm not trying to. I'm just saying she made a play for you so she could get her hands on those papers you were holding over her brother's head and destroy them. Right, Crystal?
Oh, it may have started like that, but...
Now, hold on, Rogue. You're not trying to say that Crystal
I'm not
killed...
saying anything. I'm just clearing the record. No. Crystal didn't kill your wife, Howard. Because you did.
Me? Rogue, do you realize what you're saying? What possible motive could I have?
Well, I've got my choice of several, but most of them involve blackmail and legal loopholes, and you'd have had a neater way of getting around those, so I choose good old-fashioned jealousy, the one thing you wouldn't have known how to handle.
You must be out of your mind. How could I be jealous of something I didn't even know about?
But you did know it, Howard, and the very fact that you went to such pains to conceal your knowledge is the tip-off.
But that couldn't be. Doesn't make sense. Howard loves me. You know. You saw.
Sure, I saw. I was meant to see. The guy's a lawyer, baby. You were Exhibit A. And I was going to be a star witness.
You're skating on very thin ice, Rogue. What makes you think I knew?
A little guy named Bert Hecht. A guy I hired to help me find your wife. Only he found her too fast. And he isn't that good. I figured right then he'd been keeping an eye on her for a long time for somebody else.
But why me?
You, because he said you, Howard. Who but a jealous husband hires a detective to follow his wife? Yeah. Hecht's reports must have made good reading. All the intimate details about the private concerts and the special
care. All right, Rogue, that's close enough. I'm sorry.
Don't be a fool, Howard. Put down that gun.
Yes, I'm really sorry, Rogie, for you.
It's you I'm sorry for, Howard.
Don't tell me that. Nobody feels sorry for me. Not me, not Howard Adrian. I don't need it.
Howard, you're insane. Put down that gun.
And you, Crystal, you tried to get close enough to hurt me just like all the rest, but you never could. Nobody gets close to me. Nobody knows what makes me tick in here.
Save it for the courtroom, pal. You're finished.
Yes, I know, but so are you, Rogue. So are you. If it hadn't been for you, I... Well, you're just too smart to live. Goodbye, Mr. Rogue.
For an instant, I stood expecting to fall dead, but I didn't. Instead, Howard jerked erect, spun around like a ballet dancer, and crumpled to the floor at the edge of his wife's body. And then I got it. The tuning fork was still attached. The gun was an automatic. And Crystal's high-pitched scream had set the thing in motion a second time. Howard hadn't thought of that when he stood in the line of fire, and when he did think of it, it was too late. He was killed, as you might say, by his own ingenious hand. Well, that wrapped it up. It was Bert Hecht's all-too-prompt appearance on the scene of a crime that had started the hunch I played against Howard's alibi. Just a little too coincidental. The police nabbed Hecht crossing the border to Mexico, and they picked up Barron while he was boarding a plane for Las Vegas. Hecht's original thought was to blackmail Howard. That's why he didn't tell me Howard had hired him 3 months before to spy on his wife. But the 10 grand was quicker, so he took that instead. Oh, yes, the papers. We never did find any papers. I kind of like to think that they didn't exist. You know what I mean?
You have just heard Barry Sullivan as Private Detective Richard Rogue in this week's graphic adventure from Rogue's Gallery.
I'd like to thank our Rogue's Gallery players, who were Lorene Tuttle, Gerald Moore, Peter Leeds, and Ed Mack. Thanks, too, to Charles Vander, producer and director of your Fitch Bandwagon summer series, Rogue's Gallery. Until next Sunday, then, this is Barry Sullivan saying, don't forget to switch to Fitch.
Laugh a while, let a song to your style, you Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, shave your hair, you Fitch shampoo.
Men, after shaving, be smile happy. For that tingling, frosty, fresh feeling, use Fitch's Skin Pep After Shaving Lotion. It's a smooth antiseptic lotion with a lasting He-Man scent. Get Fitch's Skin Pep After Shaving Lotion. To get your bullet ballpoint pen, send name, address, 25 cents, and the box top from Fitch Shampoo, Quin Oil, Hair Tonic, or After Shaving Lotion to Fitch, Des Moines, 6, Iowa. Jim Doyle speaking.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. The preceding NBC program was transcribed earlier to be heard at this time. KFI, Los Angeles, Earl C. Anthony Incorporated, California distributor of Packard Motor Cars.
That's it for Case Closed this week. There's more from Jeff Regan, Rogues Gallery, Case Closed, and all of the other podcasts at RelicRadio.com. You'll find our Shoutcast stream there as well, and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. It's how all of this is made possible every week. Thanks again to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.